CliffCentral.com.
It is all happening this Friday morning on CliffCentral.com. We have Ben back from Australia and Gord back from Europe and me back from almost dying of whatever I had on Wednesday and Thursday. But I'm alive, and so are they, and here they are. Look at them. Hello, you resplendently glorious human beings. Oh. Hello, Gordo.
What's up, my dudes? How's it looking?
The fuck is going on in your background?
You still I have moved.
Oh.
And not moved in the sense that it's a remarkable thing like it would have been on the show 2 or 3 years ago. Moved as in moved house. And it is utter chaos. Moving is one of the most traumatic things you
I'm with Ben. It looks like you stole a TV.
That looks like your average chav's lounge. They just come home, they found a TV in the back of a truck. And
what did you learn in Manchester?
I hope it's nice when I unwrap it.
Hey, about God. Did you learn to steal a TV? Is that what you learned to do in Manchester?
I'll tell you what, moving is the absolute pit, and I try to throw money at it. Yeah. Like, if you guys ever see a social media post of, like, me carrying boxes and shit, you must just...
We're frozen now.
Offer to help and help, because it means I'm too proud to say that I'm, like, utterly on the bones of my ass. I will sell the shit that I have to prevent having to move it myself. So even with movers doing the packing and the whole story, you still have to, like, unpack boxes. And,
yeah, but...
Yeah, my TV's all wrapped in
Gord,
double wrap. I don't even have a place to sit. Like, my desk is over there.
You know what? At least you're not one of those friends who calls you up when they need to move and says, hey, do you mind if we use your Bucky, or do you mind if you can come and help me move shit from here to here, do 17 trips? Because I've been asked to do that once or twice. Of course, I've declined every time. I'm not that kind of friend. Everybody knows that.
You got a Bucky?
No, but if I did, and I can get one, and people know that, so they're like, "Oh, can you help?" And I go, "No."
No. Moving is professionals. You contribute to the economy. You create work.
Right.
Like, no disrespect to people who genuinely can't afford it, but it's not like it's the price of a small vehicle. It's just an inconvenient amount of money. But even with that money spent, you still have to, like, put shit in where it's supposed to go. And the trouble with it is that when everything's piled up in boxes and that, you need to create less space in order to create more. You've got to get these boxes out and you have to, like, unpack.
So I heard that you got back from Europe and you hadn't paid your rent and there was a dead animal in your place, and that's why you've been kicked out. Is that not true?
I mean, I wouldn't call her an animal, dude. That's like, you know, this is a human being, for God's sake. No, I had my stuff in storage, and I had to organize a new place while I was away, and it's been an adventure. It's been fun. Moving sucks, but, I mean, you just got to do it. So sorry about the bubble wrap.
No, it's all right.
TV.
It's okay.
My bad.
It's all right.
Sorry, Gordon. I just want to get brought up to speed because I think I've missed episode 3 and 4 of your life. You're back from Europe. You're back in Cape Town. You're now going to be living in Cape Town.
Yeah, for the next who knows how long, 6 or 7 months. We'll see after that.
There needs to be wrap-ups. Last time with Gord.
Yeah.
And then we get the
We need a previously on the Gord Laws show. Yeah, and then we can
previously on
the Gord Laws show. Gord was hating Manchester and thinking of ways to burn it down. He then went to Holland and dealt with the Zuckerberg people and their complete lack of sense of humor. I was after
you didn't
Holland,
like
I went
Holland?
To Greece.
Holland is great, dude. I mean, the people,
I love Holland.
The people
the
there
Dutch
are
incredibly strange people.
They are very much friendlier than some of the people you'll meet in Europe. Come on.
No, they're fucking
dude,
weird, Gareth.
The Dutch have got this thing where they smile at you and tell you to fuck off. So they'll be like, "Hello, I'm not really enjoying this conversation with you. I'd like to get back to work and stop talking. So I'm going to go now. Have a nice day." And you're like,
shit.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really like you, so we're not going to carry on talking, but thanks and have a good time.
Right. And the Germans?
Yeah, Germany was cool. I mean, I was there for quite a long time. I was there for 6 weeks. I was mostly in Stuttgart, which is quite a, like, quiet, sleepy part of Germany. I also went to Berlin and Frankfurt and Oberhausen and Heidelberg for little visits. And so it was very cool. Germany's kind of like, it seems like there's not a lot of exciting stuff happening there to keep the people interested. They have this, like, everything works, everything's clean. Everyone's pretty much nice. We'll just mission around and not really pay too much attention. Like, I don't know. They feel like they need a little bit of excitement in their life. It's a little bit 7 out of 10.
They're a bit like they're a bit like the talented creative kid who gets put on Ritalin, and now everything's kind of mediocre instead of being exciting or terrifying. There's no extremes there. It's all very much contained.
Look, I like
Germans have always been like that. I mean,
I liked it a lot.
I mean, even after World War II, if you'd encountered a German who'd really lost everything and was like rummaging through the rubble of, Cologne, trying to patch together a life where everyone in their lives was dead and they had nothing, and they would go, "Yeah, everything is fine. Yeah, don't worry. We will get on with it." They don't like asking for help, much like you when you move.
I liked it a lot. But I just figure, like, I would get pretty bored living there. I think it's like, I know that they've got, like, a lot of fun nightclubs and that sort of thing in Berlin. I didn't go into any of them. I was expecting Berlin to be, like, super hedonistic. I was expecting, like, dudes in latex walking another dude down the road and just, like, gunnage on the streets, like, MDMA kiosks selling, an oak with MDMA and brezels in a little stand outside of the coffee place. Yeah. But it was just, like, quite a hip place, London's more subversive in certain places. LA is definitely shittier and more shocking. There's just some nice bars and some nice clubs, and mostly it's just like a rad German city with a bit of like hip Cape Town if everything worked.
So where did you enjoy going the most? And now that you can look back on it was a couple of months. I mean, listen, I gave you credit in your absence the other day and said it is a very enviable thing for someone like me who I need a base of operations. I need a place to call home. I do not like traveling forever. And I my favorite part of a trip is coming home. And I know Ben's just been on a great trip to Australia too. So this is probably the worst thing I can say to either of you. You think I'm insane. But you went, you decided, fuck this, I'm going to take a trip, I'm going to go for as long as I want, I'm going to travel around Europe, I'm going to see a bunch of people I want to see there, I'm going to do some work while I'm there. It was an extended time, dude, and you really seem to have, had a very, very interesting time.
Yeah, it was an opportunity that kind of came around out of circumstance, and some of them kind of that you might not be able to line up again. I wasn't sure if I was going to, how long I was going to stay in Cape Town or stay in the country. I've always had ideas of living overseas just because it's something I've always wanted to do. Not like, I'm not one of these like, fuck this place, fleeing South Africa types. I just really enjoy Europe and especially the UK. So the place I was in, the lease was running out. I kind of thought, shit, if I'm going to, emigrating is a sudden and drastic move. I need to give that a bit more thought, and I don't really have enough time. The place I was in had some issues with it that I was keen for the landlord to sort out. Nothing like myth. I just was like, look, if you get rid of these ugly carpets and sort out one or two things, I'll pay a bit more rent and stay. He wasn't keen. So I, suddenly I can't see anyone other than myself.
Just you.
So I, so I just, I thought I'm going to have to move. And again, moving is something I throw money at, even if I'm moving to the place next door, which I tried to do in Joburg once, but failed, and that's a different story. So I had to move from sea point to sea point. Doesn't cost a whole lot less than moving from sea point to storage to sea point.
But
so
people, this is the most dreary part of the Gorge show. I wanted to know whether you'd got laid or not, because Ben and I were fairly convinced you were actually running away from responsibilities, that you'd fathered some children here, and you were trying to get away before the court.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a pretty drastic way. I would just probably, like...
How old are the kids now, Gorge?
Yeah.
How old are the kids?
I don't know yet, actually. It wasn't anything like that. I just thought, let me go, and I've got a remote job, so if I've got internet, I can do it, and I've got some friends to stay with, which would account for about half the time, and then pay. So I paid for accommodation, small places, some of them with kitchens, some of them without. Over the course of 4 months, for half of the time I was with friends, and for half of the time I was in little Airbnbs and hotels, and it still cost me 3 times what it costs to live in Cape Town.
Wow.
So by that maths, it would be 6 times the price, because it was half the time paid.
That's insane. When you put it like that, then it's suddenly, I often say, and this goes to what Ben was saying in the first half hour, or the second half hour this morning about Australia, and he loved Melbourne, and we're not going to go over that again, but if you didn't hear it for any reason, go and listen to that half hour. He gave a pretty good synopsis of what he thought of Melbourne, and he thinks it's an absolute gem. It's a world-class city. It's amazing. There are things there that just you can't find in South Africa. But to bring a bit of balance to the discussion, I've often said, and I've had it proven by people who have more experience of living in various places than I do, that we really, for our buck in South Africa, you get to have a quality of living, you know, if you're a middle-class South African, that you wouldn't be able to achieve anywhere in Europe,
yeah,
or the UK, or in Australia, or in America.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Yeah, like, you have to be earning the currency, obviously, and that's, then it becomes relative. Sure, I get that. That's just basic economics.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, for me, accommodation was the big thing, and not so much the price of food, although there is that. It's like some things are like double, triple, or quadruple what they cost here. But, I mean, if you buy the right stuff, you could get away with sort of 110 to 150% the cost for food. But meat, first of all, it's shitty in Europe, and secondly, it's really expensive. I've come to realize that cows is part of what makes home home. Mm-hmm. And what I don't understand as well, no one could explain this to me, including some like German people and some expats that have lived there for a long time, is why you drive across the border from Holland to Germany and meat and beef rather goes from double what it costs here to five times what it costs here. Is there a special tax on cows in Germany? Are they not allowed? Also, meat is always really lean, and without going into boring shit about my diet, I like fatty meat. And when I say fatty, I mean here you can get ridiculous. You can get a steak that's three quarters fat, you know, and it's got an edge of meat on it. But there, they starve the animal to death. They put it in the field, they wait for it to starve, and then they hack what's left off and put it in the supermarket. But like Germany, beef is like five times what it costs here, and everywhere else it's like two to three times what it costs here. And this cuck, scrawl, little minute steak that like isn't nice. Like
I wonder if
fat on it.
You know, nobody's doing any doctorates in anything useful anymore, but I wonder if someone would do a proper research study on how a complete lack of meat in the diet turns people into milksops and weaklings, and whether or not that has an effect on their voting, whether they can, you know, sort of like, for example, people with mental health issues usually vote on the left of the political spectrum. So, you know, a lot of deeply unhappy, bipolar, crazy, depressed, anxious, that kind of, all those people who have, you know, real, serious, and concerning medical issues, mental issues, they usually vote to the left. I wonder if people, when they stop eating meat and they stop using, you know, red blood protein, meat, carnivorous stuff in their diet, they stop eating that stuff like our ancestors used to, whether it slows them down and makes them pathetic. Because I do think, like, there are a lot of these cities that, you know, where meat is something that people frown upon. And, you know, if you're a vegan, you tell people within the first 5 seconds of meeting them. A lot of those places don't seem to me to produce a lot of warriors or people who have anything resembling
chow pigs, dude.
Good ideas.
Like, there is meat. It's just all made of pigs. Whereas here,
really?
We dismantle cows. Like, we have biltong,
yeah,
and it is like the most glorious thing in the whole universe. We have like abundant red meat, but especially like beef and also lamb is readily available. There, it's just pigs. If you like pork, it's Valhalla. Like, they do the most incredible shit with pork, all the different sausages and whatever, but, like, it's hard to find beef. And Germany especially, it's like a lot of stores don't even have it. I bought a steak, and, I mean, it was a large, beautiful steak. We went to a market, and me and my buddy were like, we're having a steak, and we spent 1,100 rand on two steaks. They were probably 500 grams each. They were, like, nice, and it was, like, over 1,000 rand, and that was like something that you would get here for
You must have been craving that in a big way to have gone and spent like over 1,000 rand for a 500 gram steak. I mean, Ben, you eat a lot of meat, and you know, you found like this one place where they give you a special once a week, but you wouldn't spend 1,000 rand in a week on meat.
No, fuck that. I mean, like, as much as I spoke about how cosmopolitan Melbourne is, like, all I want is I want 4 eggs in the morning, I want some avocado. And then at night, I want a slab of meat.
Yeah.
Like, it's really great. There's fusion food, and there's 73 different ingredients in this bowl, which looks incredible. But after day three, I started getting a bit edgy here. Like, I mean, obviously this comes down to conditioning, you know. It's like you condition yourself to live a certain way, you become used to it, so therefore you like it. We can all adapt and change. But I want to eat steak. I want to eat good steak, and I want to have a braai. I want to be outside. This whole thing of being, it makes a big difference to your mindset. It really does.
I mean, talking about being outside, so I don't know what I picked up on. It must have been Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, because I started feeling absolutely shit by sort of Tuesday afternoon, and then I was literally in bed the whole day Wednesday, which is not like me. If I were even a little bit okay, I would have got on with it and done some things. I canceled all my appointments. Yesterday I was pretty useless as well. But I'm feeling much better today. Still got a cough and a whole bunch of stuff. But I was thinking that it obviously, you know, there's a change of seasons going on. So there's a lot of pollen in the air. There's a lot of kind of winter giving you its last sting in the tail. But if you don't go outside and you're not in the sun, I think that makes you weak. Just like not eating any meat at all. I just have a theory about this. I can't prove it yet. I'm not equipped with the research or with the facilities to be able to prove this. But I do think like being in the sun and eating a fair amount of red meat, not too much and not too little, is probably a good recipe.
Like, this is a stretch, Gareth. I'm pretty sure there is research.
I'm sure there is.
You need triglycerides, and that you get like fat as opposed to oil. I don't want to get too complicated with it, but a monoglyceride is oil, and a triglyceride is fat that your body can use. Now, I'm strongly of the opinion, with scientific research, that that's the human food source. Most of it comes from animal fats, and you can get some good ones in the vegetable world, like avocados, olives, a few others. You're pretty fucked if you're a vegan.
Yeah.
You can eat healthily, and you guys know the whole story with me and losing 130 kilos. I want to make this about that, but like I've seen the results, not only with weight, but how I feel. And I've also done a lot of research. And I know when you have a viewpoint on something like nutrition or science, whatever, you can find research to back up your opinion.
Sure.
But I mean, I know for a fact that the body utilizes triglycerides. It makes ketones. It's difficult to store them as fats. Very easy to use them as a food source. You don't need to deploy insulin, which fucks a lot of people up. I know how you get with fat folk, Gareth, but like for some of us, insulin is a real problem, and for other people it's easy. Like some people are, like me, can just only eat cheese and be healthy and happy, and other people are very lactose intolerant. So you might have no problem after you've eaten some carbs being normal. I crave like a crack fiend more carbohydrates because the point is fats are good for you, and the best ones and the most readily available ones are in animals. So, like, I don't want to get into a political debate with vegetarians and vegans and all that shit. There's also a whole, like, you know, farming a kilo of meat uses more land than 100 kilos of wheat.
I've decided it's you don't have political debates with vegans. You challenge them to, like, all-out physical confrontation. You just go straight to that. It usually resolves the issue.
Factory farming animals is horrific, and I'm not for it either, but like if you have a patch of land and you let cows walk around on it, it's good for the land. Mm. If you say like having ruminants fucks the planet up, you're like, well, there used to be 100 million buffalo in Africa and now there's 10.
Yeah.
So should we slaughter the ones that are left? They're natural things. Anyway, the point of it is that like it's a natural diet to eat triglycerides, and if you do a vegan thing, you end up supplementing iron and all kinds of stuff. So to say like I don't like the way the human being has adapted to eat, I don't enjoy the way we've evolved, it's like me going on and saying, so therefore it's not our diet, therefore we eat plants because I prefer the idea, is like me going, it would have been fucking cool if we evolved the ability to fly and then climbed up on a building and went, nature, and jumped off. So if you're doing that in protest to politics, if you're a vegan and you're doing it as because of your feelings and because of what you believe, it's admirable. It's the same as someone going on a hunger strike or those Catholic dudes that beat themselves. You're doing something harmful to yourself to make a point.
Let me ask you this.
More power to you, but don't then go like, oh, we're plant eaters.
A quick change of subject here, because I think there's a lot going on in the world today. Obviously, this weekend, it's all going to be dominated by the death of the Queen. Do you care about that at all, Gord?
I'm sorry that like a person who was by all accounts like a hardworking, but she was a cool, I don't know a huge amount about it, but she was like a really sort of She queened well, and she did, like, difficult queening things, and she was there for the people during hard times, and she wasn't, like, some dumb, you know, Twitter celebrity, modern royal that, like, is just rich and famous for a living. So I feel that also had a pretty good innings, and I don't, as long as she didn't suffer, it's like any old person that's died, I guess.
Yeah.
Sad,
I just feel sorry for her latter years, because obviously Harry brought shame to the family with Meghan.
And
William couldn't arrest. I mean, William couldn't arrest his hair loss, so he looked very common. Andrew was fucking kids. I mean, like, they were all just letting the side down, and she was holding it together in the years that she should have been really enjoying herself. Now, that's what really, breaks my heart a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's Andrew. I mean, apparently the schools in Scotland are closing, and not because the Queen died, but just because Andrew is in Balmoral. So they're all just closing just as a precaution. It was one of the comments someone put.
Who queens or kings now?
Charles.
Charles
the Third. King Charles.
Charles is king. Yeah. King Charles.
Yeah.
It's a really great day for Spaniels around the world.
Yes.
They're all rejoicing.
I said to my King Charles Cavalier Spaniel yesterday, aren't you excited? It's King Charles time again. It hasn't been since the 1600s. And she just looked at me. Obviously, she's a dog.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I feel like an old person has passed away and the whole world's not going to shut up about it for a while, but it's like, it's quite a well-established figure. I get annoyed when the internet goes nuts about something that doesn't matter and isn't relevant and just shows that people are very basic and don't have anything else to talk about. But I think you're entitled to a couple of, you know, tweets and Instagrams about the Queen. I'm just like, okay, how long is this going to last? Are we going to be queening for 3 days or 3 weeks?
Yeah, okay, but I've got a deeper question on this. So she's head of state, 14 different places. Take Australia, for example.
Mm.
They might want to become more independent. Now that she's gone, in this little gap here, will they become a little bit more determined to become independent? I mean, is it going to start shaping the state of global politics now with her gone? Because Charles, I mean, let's be honest, Charles is a fruitcake. He's like a hyper-environmentalist, please eat the plants. I sniff my own.
They don't have a huge amount of real influence. Like, I know that it's an important job and there's a lot of figureheading but you can't just, like, make a law, right? So surely a nutter monarch would be more fun.
Mm.
They can't, like, launch a nuclear missile, right? So, like, surely having a complete loon do crazy shit would be more fun than somebody conscientious and responsible and out there doing good.
I think so, and I've always thought that Charles will be a very good king because he's actually... He's not terribly interesting. I mean, that's not an insult, but the more boring you are as a monarch, the chances are the better your country does. If you look throughout history, the most boring, long-lived monarchs, the ones who don't really create too many ructions, they don't have too many opinions of their own. I mean, sure, Charles is a bit loopy. He talks to plants and that kind of thing. He, you know, that's not a dangerous thing. And it's not like he can suddenly pass a law or chop off people's heads if they don't talk to plants. I mean, those days are...
Yeah, you don't want a loon in charge of that loon.
The question I was asking is that now, are these states going to take Charles seriously or are they going to become more independent and kind of go their own way? Because the Queen had a lot of clout with her. She had a lot of prestige and heritage and all that kind of stuff. Now, plant-talking guy, are they going to go, cool, we've had a good run, but, you know, we're going to take the reins a bit more here? Is that going to happen?
Well... What is likely to happen is absolutely nothing. It'll stay the same because this is what's been happening in the case of the English monarchy for 1,000 years. Scotland have been weaving in and out of that for at least the last 600. You know, Ireland has had their issues with the royal family, and they've kind of separated out in the last 80 to 120 years. So people will come and people will go. But places like Australia and Canada... I mean, you've got to remember, there's a really interesting book I've got here called Who Owns the World? I mean, you know that we can joke about the king or queen being completely unimportant in the world today. And they've done a very good job of smoke and mirrors by kind of they're there to cut ribbons and open parliament and make a speech and host a little pageant and all of that stuff. But actually, and this is a fact which is incontrovertible, I have yet to meet someone who has a good legal argument against this. You know that the Queen, or now King Charles III, actually owns every piece of land in Canada, in Australia, in New Zealand, and in Great Britain. Owns it completely. They are the only owners. The King of England now is the only person who can say, this land is mine. He can evict anyone he likes, even if they paid for that property, even if they paid for it 400 years ago. He has...
This sounds like some horseshit.
No,
I'm not saying that you're factually incorrect. I'm saying, like, as a system, that sounds like some horseshit. Like,
well,
if the king writes a letter or the queen writes a letter and says, you no longer own your place, I'll be like, fuck off, king.
They will be within their rights to have you evicted. And they can use...
How does the king of England own every piece of land in Canada?
They do, because Canada was conquered in the name of the British Empire. And Britain, deep down in its bones, isn't a constitutional monarchy. It's a feudal system. It's like if King Goodwill's really...
But they're not in charge anymore.
No, they are. Actually, they've just hidden it very well.
Of Canada.
Yes, they've hidden
it. They've got that total nut job, Justin Trudeau, whatever his name is.
Listen, like, Gord, Justin Trudeau got his job once the Queen gave it to him. He gets elected by the Canadian public, but she has to, or she had to at the time, sign off on that. It's a very quiet kind of background form of control. Here's where it gets interesting. So you could argue that King Charles, won't actually affect his rights to a piece of Canadian land, for example. But if he wanted to, he could. Similarly, if Canada wanted to abolish the monarchy and get rid of them, they'd have to come to some sort of arrangement. And if Charles wanted to, he could insist on being compensated for all the land he's going to lose. And that would bankrupt Canada for the next 500 years. It
feels like Canada could just say no. Who's going to enforce this? I now demand 500 trillion pounds for you guys to be free. Gord, and they just go like, well, stick it up your ass, King.
I didn't make the rules. These are just... So lawyers will tell you that in just pure law, there is a way that without anyone even getting close, the most land on earth that has ever been owned by one person is currently owned by the King of England right now. That man owns more land than anyone else, but by leagues. The American government doesn't even come close. I think they're about fourth.
What about McDonald's? I know it's not an individual, but they own quite a lot of land.
They do, but they're far, far down the list. I mean, it's probably King of England, probably the Vatican after that, because they own churches all over the world and a lot of other property. And then you'll have, you know, absolute monarchies that own all of the territory under their control. Places like Saudi Arabia, where the king of Saudi Arabia owns everything in Saudi Arabia, including the people. Swaziland's like that.
Your lack of understanding of Commonwealth realm countries is staggering. The monarch of the United Kingdom is essentially the head of state in a realm country. My lack of giving even an iota of a shit is staggering, and I'd like to test you on 80s and 90s thrash metal and then judge you for not knowing enough about it. I don't care.
So,
like, this is not interesting. It's interesting because Gareth's telling me trivia that, like,
so just
wow,
to,
I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Just to but wrap, like, look, this is something you... I don't know that a lot of people know this. I read a book a while ago.
Or give a shit, but it's interesting when you talk about it because this is some interesting shit.
Well,
I don't know this, and
if
who cares?
If you buy property in the UK or in Canada or in Australia, you buy it. You actually pay for the property. You get what is called a freehold or a leasehold. You don't get ownership. Look it up on your contract. If you're listening to us in Canada or in Australia or in Britain right now or in Scotland or in Northern Ireland, you don't actually own it. You get a freehold, which can last up to 100 years, or you get a leasehold. The fact that the British monarchy doesn't come around and claim that territory after 100 years is... because they're going to let it slide. It creates too much constitutional friction for them to
get
involved.
Could they, like, summon the British military to help enforce a land reclaim if they wanted to, like, use half of Canada for a croquet lawn?
The Queen, or now King Charles III, is the absolute head of the military. So even though he's this kind of ridiculous man who talks to plants and cuts ribbons and says, what did you do at public events, he can technically have the entire military do his absolute bidding. And even if Parliament complains, he can dissolve Parliament. I mean, this is something that is possible. This has happened in the past.
I said earlier, like, what's the harm if it's a nut job? They can't, like, nuke someone for nothing, but they actually could.
Well, yeah, I suppose they could because they're in charge of the military. But it would be very unusual, let's put it that way. So there's this funny thing that happens, and that's why at the beginning of the show this morning I spoke about this a little bit. But there's this bizarre, uncomfortable tension between hereditary monarchy and constitutional democracy, and it kind of makes Britain work, you know? It makes Britain work. Somehow it's been a very stable country for the last 200 years, and although it's not the empire, the great powerful empire that it was in the 1800s, it's indisputable that people still consider Britain one of the great countries, even though it's, you know, in terms of actual world superpower ratings, you could say that it slipped right down. But it's amazing.
I enjoyed London a lot, man. Like, I did a couple of other parts of England that were better and not better, and I really thought Manchester was quite shitty, as we discussed on the previous show. But you mentioned Scotland, like, kind of having this uneasy tension, and also Ireland. I really, really, really enjoyed Edinburgh, but I was there in what was technically the middle of summer, and it was like always day, which is kind of nice, but it's weird. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's like there's patches of the day, like kind of from mid-morning until evening, where you can go around in a T-shirt and possibly shorts. But still, you need like a hoodie with you, because if it gets cold, it gets properly cold and it rains. So I thought Edinburgh was just beautiful and like such a cool vibe and like a really great place. But I was like, this in winter would be the pits. And the same with Dublin. I've always liked Dublin, but like that weather hates you. Scottish weather is a bit shit, but it does what it's supposed to do. You get the weather report and it's like it'll be rainy in the morning, sunshine in the afternoon, cloudy in the evening, and it more or less does that. Dublin, it's like by the time you flee inside to get rid of your layers because you've caught fire in the sun, you come back outside and it's freezing again, and it's like God is trying to piss people off. So, like, the weather there is what ruins it, because you ask which places I really enjoyed. I've heard things like the Scottish are planning to leave the UK, and there was a referendum, and it was close, and then they would apply to join the EU. I have British citizenship because my mum was born in Scotland, and if I then had the choice between an EU, and I know they would not immediately get into the EU, but if they left the UK and then got into the EU, and I had to choose between my English passport and an EU Scottish passport, I'd take the EU one.
Really?
Is that a real thing? Is that actually going to happen? Like, possibly, or is it just some bullshit people talk about?
Like, a lot of this stuff is just theoretical, and if there's enough public pressure on something, it usually can have an effect. I don't know. I don't know the details. It's just interesting that there are these aspects of, you know, kind of trivia related. For example, today, something very, very ancient and ridiculous happens. A whole bunch of heralds, you know, like the people who used to trumpet at the beginning of, like, a battle or make public announcements. Go, hear ye, hear ye. It started in ancient Rome. A herald is going to appear on the balcony of St. James's Palace, which is in London. It's not the main palace, but it used to be. And it's in a place called Friary Court in St. James's Palace. There'll be a small crowd of people there. And the herald, which is usually Garter King of Arms, who wears this funny outfit that is made up of actual pieces of the Queen's coat of arms. So it's, you know, the arms of England. It's like the royal standard. He will stand there with a funny hat on with feathers on it, and he will read from a scroll and announce the death of the Queen and the accession of King Charles III. And he'll announce that, and that's the moment that the King is proclaimed. And Charles will be sitting somewhere and suddenly will have all of these powers and all of these authorities devolve upon him. I mean, it's like the weirdest thing. It's like a bit of ritual. It's interesting to watch, though. It's tradition.
How do you get into heralding, right? Like, is this someone whose full-time job is to be, like, a royal herald, and they do pretty well with it, and they've got, like, a pension and all the benefits, and they're just standing by ready to herald this moment? Or is it, like, some dude who has, like, a different job? He's actually an actuary. He plays golf on the weekend, and he's part of, like, the herald enthusiast society, and is, like, waiting for the call-up one day, and he's just like, oh, this is a bit of a laugh, like being a Freemason.
It's a job. It's a full-time job. He works at a place called the College of Arms. I actually, I interviewed this guy, about 4 years ago.
I should have been a herald. I'd be good at that.
It's really interesting. He deals with all kinds of, arcane things like, to coats of arms and styles and titles. And he's the person who's there at the funeral of the Queen. He'll break his staff of office and throw it into the grave with her. And then he has to... There he is. That's Garter, King of Arms. That's what he wears.
When that is an outfit of notes. I want one of those just to wear it like as a fashion vibe. I would wear one of those out.
Yeah.
Those stockings.
Yep. And the shoes with buckles on them. I mean, it's like... And that was the uniform.
Is he standing in front of a mirror, or did they just operate in fours where you have to look like that, you have to have that haircut, and you stand bum to bum and march in this sort of...
Every quarter.
It's one guy, but it's a series of photographs that were published of you know, kind of important office bearers in the UK a while ago. But what's cool about this is that there are about, I think there are about 11 or 12 heralds at the moment. So there are 12 people whose full-time job it is to dress up like this and do shit. That's what makes, you know... That
so they do other shit than just proclaim the death of the queen and the jaw of the new king. That oak has got to go and... and do some shit like on a regular basis.
They do very interesting shit. They know they've got a huge library where they keep records of all the, you know, royal families of Europe, and they kind of can trace people's lineage, and they grant people arms, and they.
I mean, you need the you to have arms. You need the royal's permission.
Not these arms, and you fucking idiot. the coat of arms. That,
I mean, that's...
You know that. Listen. You know why people have a coat of arms or used to have a coat of arms? You know why it mattered? Because you could only call yourself a gentleman if you had coat armor. Because otherwise you were just a kind of bottom-dwelling peasant. You'd eat rocks and soil.
You were not gentle. You were just a min. Barak is men, but...
No, right. You're a serf. You're a peasant. So if you wanted to be called a gentleman...
But it's like so cart before the horse. You like, you could only, you had to have a coat of arms so you could call yourself a gentleman, so you got one because you wanted to be a gentleman. No. Like, who decided
but you couldn't
that?
Just,
like, right, no, you are just men, and you guys are gentle because you have that really cool drawing above your on your windowsill.
You couldn't...
We all should get one.
You couldn't just get it either. You had to, in the old medieval times, you had to be able to afford a horse and weapons and go to war... when the king called on you. So then his reward to you was to grant you arms so that you could be identified on the battlefield, and you could then pass those arms down to your children, who would then also be gentlemen instead of peasants.
I've always wanted my own coat of arms, and I like it would have Blackie Chan on either side, like doing a cat thing, and then on the inside it would have like a piece of cheese, like the little M from Metallica, and a couple of other things that would be super cool. And I would like also, I've always wanted like a ring, and I've thought about trying to get this made. I asked about it, it's expensive and difficult, but you have like an actual seal, like the one on the Kellogg's box, you know, like a cartoon seal, and then GL underneath, but in reverse. So I can use it to do a wax stamp, and that would be the official seal of Gord Laws.
That's something a lot of people still do, Gord. It's not such a weird thing. It counts as a signature.
Then you have to get it registered with the Herald, and then you have to have a certain amount of ducks and like a horse of a certain size before they'll grant you the right to do it.
Yes, exactly. So not just for everybody. I mean, these are...
Ben, what would be on your coat of arms?
Just like a stake, a sun, and actual arms. Just like one here, one here.
Oh, shit, your coat of arms would have arms. That's pretty cool.
You just have arms, totally. Because then it'd be like, you know, you got to have your goals in life. Your kind of arms should display that.
Well,
and two cats.
On the topic of arms, I follow your socials, and it looks like you are just flexing your tits nonstop. Like you shredded like a wheat biscuit. How's that all going? Are you planning to like increase gains, or are you going for leanness? Like, what's your current training objective? Get bigger, cut in time for summer, just performance orientated.
Dude, I haven't done anything for 2 weeks, so I'm like just fellow, I think is the word. No, Gord, I've got an account that basically is that kind of stuff. I'm not flexing my tits off, I promise. I'm just documenting stuff. But right now, I just want to be healthy, bro. Fuck, I really realized like all that kind of other stuff is just noise. No one gives a fuck about it. Just be healthy, strong, and just be happy. And I've really just gone through so many different cycles of what I thought was important or what I thought was cool. No, dude, like, just, I'm in a much better place because I just want to be healthy.
Well, you look handsome as damn it, dude.
Between Gareth's eternal youth from drinking the blood of virgins and your shredded riptitude, I got this like I think I would have visible abs if I didn't have the saggy patch of ball bag skin under the bottom of my stomach. But like between the two of you, I'm like, God damn it, these dudes are handsome and I've got no bloody hair.
Good, look at this.
It's called a signet ring.
I found you. I found you something interesting.
I actually know that the little square ring is called a signet ring. I'm talking about the seal on it.
Look at all those dudes with their.
I bet you these dudes have never had consensual sex. Like, I mean, that is a nerd gathering of note.
I mean, this is the nerdiest thing I've ever actually discovered. Like, those guys make Silicon Valley guys look like frat boys.
Yeah. Now, those dudes are proper nerds, and I mean, good for them for being able to get such a strange and cool job with an outfit like that, but those dudes are either paying for it or not having it, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, so by the way...
I also reckon guys like that...
Yeah? Go ahead, Ben?
I reckon guys like that are probably the happiest people in the world, because they're nothing else in life other than a herald, right? Imagine there's something so designed for your nerdiness and your quirkiness that you can just be that all day. They must be hugely happy.
No, they are. I mean, if you're really into history...
How do you get into heralding? Like,
you go and you...
Does it have to be a family thing? Do you have to have a coat of arms, enough ducks,
listen,
your father
don't be,
to
don't be ridiculous. I thought that might be an interesting job once. And I mean, I didn't pursue it, but it's easy to do. Funnily enough, pursuivant is what you're called before you become a herald. It's like an apprenticeship. You're a pursuivant.
But then you lost your virginity and no longer qualified to be a herald. And
listen,
your dreams would die.
You ask the question, I'll give you the answer. So you go to the College of Arms and you ask them to enroll you. And then they look at you and they go, well, you know, this person has no experience in this. You haven't got any degrees in this. Or maybe you're not interested enough. Maybe you don't know anything. Or maybe you're just not the kind of person who they necessarily want in the office. It's like any other job. You apply, and then they'll choose a few people every year. There are still people who want to become heralds. It's amazing. And then if you get to the top of the pile, you get called Garter King of Arms, and you oversee a whole bunch of shit. You're actually tremendously important. Like, you'll see a role that he plays now at the coronation, sort of middle of next year. That's going to blow your mind, by the way. I often say to people, you know, a lot of people think that a royal wedding is a big deal. You have no idea. Like, when a coronation, and this is something that doesn't happen very many times in any one lifetime, because, you know, there are not that many kings and queens in the world that are still crowned. But this is an absolute, like, tour de force of pageantry and show, and it's incredible. And the amount of stuff that happens there, and ancient things that are resuscitated for the first time. I mean, the chair that King Charles will be crowned on has been kept in Westminster Abbey since 1307. It is a wooden chair with a stone at the bottom of it that was taken from Scotland. It's called the Stone of Scone, which Scottish kings were crowned on for another 500 or 600 years before that even. And there's so much that goes on around this. It's fascinating. I mean, you know that now, right now, the British national anthem is God Save the King, not God Save the Queen. Changed overnight.
It would make sense to change that because people would think it's a pretty ineffectual. Maybe that, I was going to like make a joke about how the national anthem didn't work, but maybe it did. I mean, if singing, please do not let Gareth die, we'd be sad if Gareth did die. If that
then
could
die,
be why, like, it would keep you alive till you're like 145.
Right. Well, I mean, I saw a very funny tweet yesterday, like, God on Twitter, who's someone who I've interacted with in the past. He sent me his book. The Tweet of God is his Twitter handle. And he said, I tried to save her, but even God can't save everybody. You know, it was hilarious. So, Gord, there's a master herald at Edinburgh Castle. You could have gotten your coat of arms while you were there, you lazy slob, according to Congo Chris.
Also, somebody asked, I've lost the comment now, somebody to do with rock and roll, just Rock Up TV asked, what's the salary like? I mean, are you going to like have a holiday home somewhere warm and, you know, like investments in pounds if you're a medium to senior herald, or is it like...
No, it's like a...
Vocational.
No, it's like
vocational.
It's like a bureaucrat salary. It's not going to, you're not going to pay for millions of things. If you want to do that stuff, I mean...
That ruins it.
Yeah. And the stamps, notes, and coins are going to change too. Obviously, all of that changes now to Charles's face instead of the Queen's.
They changed the face on the coins. Ben, what would your favorite, like, weird-ass job be if you could, like, do some random and ob shit like heralding? You get paid a lot for it just to do something completely bizarre.
It'd be really cool to change street names. You can change an entire city through names, and you have like, you can have like a Metallica district where you literally just put the names of Metallica songs in one area.
I hate to disabuse you of the notion.
They have got a road in San Francisco.
This is totally possible, Ben. You just have to join the ANC. They're very good at renaming streets, and you can do it right now. You can go and join the ANC right now and be renaming streets by October.
I don't know if it's still there, but somewhere on William Nickel in Joburg for a long time, somewhere around like where Design Quarter is, one of those intersecting roads, there's a sign that was there for years where William ended in an N. It was like William Nickel Road. My buddy Dale Immerman, who you know, Ben, he pointed it out once and sent me a photo, and I just thought it was the most hysterical thing in the world, William Nickel. What I noticed, though, you mentioned renaming roads and stuff. We don't build statues of people anymore. I love a good statue, especially like in Germany, they're massive on that. Like the top of every building's got like 12 dudes. This is like, this is us and we're going to stand here and be important. So when dudes went for statue day in like the 1600s and 1700s, they would wear these bizarre outfits, but that's like basically dressing up for a selfie now. So now when there's like a public work or a statue that gets built and approved by the government or the town council or whatever, it's always some abstract shit. And I'm like, the old statues were just somebody like, this is what I looked like when I was doing best. Why don't they build like statues of dudes just doing their life? There should be one of like Eminem just rapping, or like Oz on a couch playing PlayStation, because reflect what people do now and what stuff looks like now.
Let me show you an example. Again, you're ignorant. They have been making statues of people. Here's a great one, which everybody knows.
Yes, I know we get a bust of a terrible bust of Cristiano Ronaldo while you're having a bad acid trip. But seriously, like because in hundreds of years people see it. And then they go like, wow, the outfits were weird. And like, they'd be like, Marshall Mathers was a dude that said rhyming things and offended people. And like, that's weird. You know, like dudes sitting in front of a PlayStation playing PlayStation. Gosh. And in 300 years, people will be like, what the fuck are they doing?
Hold on. Like I said to Ben, you can join the ANC and rename streets. You can make a statue tomorrow. You could put up a statue right outside your house in Cape Town. Do it.
But you know, like, if you were a statue maker, you obviously had, like, boom times, you know, around Victoria and all that kind of stuff. Then what happened to statue makers? Because they haven't made statues, as Gord said, for, like, 40, 50 years. You talk about, like, COVID killing the event industry. Who killed the statue industry? And what do those people do now?
And your outfit, dude. Think about choosing your outfit. Like, you see these dudes out there, it's like a 200-year-old, 300-year-old statue, and the Urk's got, like, a floppy hat and, like, a scepter and big poofy shoulder things with, like, whatever, and, like, flowing robes and standing there. And you're like, that's the dude on statue day. It was like, okay, dress nicely. Dress in your best. Maybe go get a new outfit at statue day. They weren't out looking like that every day unless they were doing some official thing. So if you were going to get your statue of just, like, Ben, you'd have to think quite hard about what you were going to wear, and some people would screw it up by going like super mainstream fashion, which even in 10 years, let alone 100 years, has aged badly, and you look like, wow, that's a terrible 80s outfit that you wore. Or they'd like try and keep it relatively sort of,
listen,
you know, classic.
Listen, I'm going to have to call this to order. We got George Meany on, and George,
and,
George, I don't know. George, there seems to be some feedback.
Sigh.
George makes me question so many.
I'm going to take you off until you figured that out, George. I don't know why, but we're hearing you. We're hearing Gord twice. And trust me, once is enough.
Let me just try, see if it happens again.
One, two.
No, it's because of George.
And
there we go.
Feedback.
All right, now we're good. How are you, Borge?
You know what I did? There's a little tick box on your system called echo cancellation. I ticked that.
Why the hell would you do that? It seems to have made an echo, not cancelled it.
No, I ticked it after you said there was feedback.
So, George, we're talking about statues, and Congo Chris says we should build a statue out of Borge, out of crushed cars. How would you like that? We could put it outside Auto Trader. All right, what's going on?
I think that'll be pretty cool.
What's going on, George?
So do you know why car alarms go off? Have you ever had a car alarm, your car alarm, or any other person's car alarm go off as a result of a loud noise?
Yeah, it happens often in like big parking lots, and then everyone's car alarm goes off. Why is that? Is it a shockwave?
That causes them to go off for just nothing, for just like no reason. The car alarm goes off.
Well,
no, but obviously this is the reason. But it seems like there isn't one.
A little known fact that car alarms sensors are more than just motion sensors. People think that car alarms go off because there's a motion sensor inside the car. That's actually not true. There are a range of shock and impact sensors inside the car that make the alarm go off if there's anything that creates vibration, and sound creates vibration. So that's why the car alarm goes off when there's a loud noise.
Okay. So they build these things into them, which is damned annoying because it means that you have to go through the trauma of an accident or an impact or something, and then you also have to be irritated by the wee 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 that happens afterwards. It's great thinking.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
But isn't that a sound sensor, or is it a motion sensor that gets triggered by a loud enough sound causing motion? Is it supposed to detect a loud noise, or is it a byproduct of the vibration of a loud noise?
I think it's a byproduct of the vibration of a loud noise. It's meant as a shock or impact sensor.
Hmm.
Okay.
All right.
That's my opinion. Didn't say that in the research that we did on this topic.
I'm going to go and shout at cars in parking lots and see if I can make their alarm go off by like just yelling at them. Go with a pot and a pan and be like, yeah, this car's alarm sucks. Didn't pick that up at all.
That reminds me, Gareth, and I didn't say hello to Ben. How's it, Ben?
Yeah, good, Josh.
I thought you, when I saw you this morning when I tuned into the show, I thought you were like just woken up because you were so still. You were just sitting there, and Gareth was talking, and you were just still.
He was probably bored. He was probably bored with me. You know, Ben is useless at pretending he gives a shit about something when he really doesn't. He's probably sitting there going, "Oh well, this guy just shut up."
Gareth was going on a bit, but
thanks, George. You were also bored. Frozen. Great.
talking about, I went to Cape Town this week, and very quickly, I remember I bought that book of Munda.
Yeah, leadership book.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So I started reading it on the airplane,
mm-hmm.
And I've like got to the second page, and I was like, "This is a shit book. Why the hell am I reading this book?" And I carried on reading and carried on reading, and then I realized that I was actually in the preface. I wasn't in the book yet, you know, and the preface was going on and on and on. There was no value. But then when I got to chapter one, and then I got to chapter two, there is actually quite a lot of value in that book, and it okay. And he brings it out quite early on. So
all right,
so really good book so far.
Thank
What's
God.
What's it called again? Leadership. Did you say the book's called Leadership, or it's about leadership?
Called Clarity. It's called Clarity. Yeah.
Clarity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm relieved about that because otherwise we'd have had you and Munda fighting about it. But all right, cool. What else you got for us, George?
No, I thought I mentioned a very good book. A car, right? Have you ever had to have a very difficult conversation with somebody? A car turns out to be a very good place to have a difficult conversation.
Because they can't escape?
Well, I think it may be because they can't escape. But, you know, confrontation.
If they start beating the shit out of you, they will also get themselves killed. There's one person in the world who's still alive purely because the shit they gave me was in a car while it was driving. I would have, like, beaten them to death otherwise. And it was like, well, if I do this, this person's driving, we'll both die, but it might be worth it.
Sure. Must have really pissed you off.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. But confrontation usually means that you've got to face the person. You've got to make eye contact. Human behavior, you make eye contact when you confront.
Yeah.
Whereas with car, you're actually side by side, so it creates less confrontation. So it actually diffuses the conversation a little bit. So that's one good reason why you should have difficult conversations in a car. And then also, it can be more productive in a car because your secondary, activity is having the conversation. Your primary activity is actually driving.
Okay.
So therefore it further diffuses the confrontation that might occur.
Ah, but wouldn't road rage up the ante? I mean, like if I'm arguing with someone and then someone's driving badly in front of me, or someone puts on their brakes quickly.
Very good
Wouldn't
point.
That accelerate the problem to use a...
It's not a calm environment. I'm not at my most rational. I'm like at my most sort of discerning when I'm driving around and assholes are like doing... I'm the only person in the world. Everyone else is an NPC in a video game driving, which is most people.
It's funny how people become different personalities when they get behind the wheel of a car. It fascinates me. That's why I drive electric, calms me down, I listen to serene music, and I control my emotions, as Ben was putting it earlier. You know, it's serenity.
All right. Okay, well, interesting. So if you want to have an argument with someone, do it in the car, but not while the car is moving.
Whereas I am the shittest version of myself when I'm driving in any kind of 3.5 or more traffic. Like, I like driving. I enjoy driving cars, but I hate driving. It like makes me a misanthropist that like just wishes for a comet or a nuclear war because people are just so inconsiderate. I've come to realize that the exact same system of only I exist, I'll do what I want, everyone must get out of my way exists in public walking places everywhere in the world. But like everybody's like, I'm only not going to crash into you because I lose points. I'll have admin to do. Yeah. If I kill you, there might be a court case. Not because you might have the right to... Boy.
You actually illustrate the point that the problem is people, not cars, because people will do the same stuff.
I enjoy driving a car if I have room to actually go and it's a nice car, you know, bumper to bumper traffic. It doesn't matter if I'm in a Bugatti or a Rolls Royce, I'm going to hate that. But if I can chuck it around some corners, cars are fun, but people are just, everything that's wrong with humanity is on display in traffic. Everyone's always first all the time because it's me.
Yeah.
Personalities change as you get into the car. So onto a more interesting topic. In England, you've been to England lately, Gord. In England, something bizarre happened. This car thief stole a Mitsubishi ASX, which is an SUV. And it wasn't the stealing of the car that that got him caught. On the same day that he stole the car, he didn't pay for petrol. He drove off. He didn't pay for petrol when he went to the filling station. So that was the reason the police were looking for him. So the police saw him go into this one house, and they followed him into the house. And when they followed him to the house, started searching the house, couldn't find him. And when they couldn't find him, they suddenly heard the teddy bear in the corner breathing.
Oh, my God.
And he had... found this teddy bear, cut a hole in the bottom, and climbed into the teddy bear as a hiding place.
Jesus, okay.
How massive was the teddy bear, or how small was the dude?
Well, there's the teddy bear on the screen that he climbed into.
Put that on the
map. And he climbed into his ass, which, if that, like, everything being proportionate, if that asshole of the teddy bear is big enough to get an adult human in, that has got to be a two-story teddy bear.
It's pretty big.
Well, I mean, if you look at the guy's hand on the top, it kind of gives you a little bit of a reference.
There's a hand, okay.
Oh, wow. That is a big-ass teddy bear.
It's a very small man. But the teddy bear, if the hand is that big of an adult man, is still not big enough to fit a whole human. He probably put it on his head, and then, like, the rest of him was out.
Don't know, but this guy hid in the teddy bear and got caught. And the reason
was a hiding place because he got found. So
I agree. It was a really bad hiding place. And then very finally, Gareth, the grill on the front of a car.
Yeah.
What is it used for? Traditionally, it's been used for airflow, cooling down the engine inside the car. But it turns out that the grill doesn't have to be this gaping hole in order to cool the car down. You actually only need a couple of slats in order to cool the radiator down behind the grill.
Funny, that's exactly what they said about that teddy bear. It doesn't need to be a big gaping hole. It just needs a couple of slats removed, you know?
Exactly. But it turns out that grills, like tail fins on cars, are actually quite a big feature when it comes to how people select their car.
Okay. It's all in the looks.
It looks cool. I always thought it was mostly a design element. Like they need a few holes, so then that gives them a reason to put a little designy thing at the front.
It's definitely a design element. And apparently people are attracted to cars that have grills that are big. Look at the Aston Martin. Look at the BMW, the latest BMW. The grill's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But that's actually an aesthetic feature that people are attracted to.
All right. Very good. So now we know that that's also just marketing. really. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's another aspect of marketing. Except
when you get to electric cars, you don't need the grill.
At all.
You know, in the Tesla, there's no grill.
Well,
George, I read something interesting about the Tesla when I was away. Because there were so many of them and you see them every single day, they're actually hugely ugly cars. Like, if you see one in isolation, like, wow, this is amazing, it's so futuristic. But you see them, they start to look like electric Elmiras when you see them all day, every day.
Yeah, it's almost like the Hyundai Elantra, I think it was. You know, when they first came out, they were cool, but then they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like uncool. It's like, oh, just another bloody Elantra.
Yeah.
Listen, you lot, we're out of time. Thank you for a lovely Friday morning. Gord, Ben, and George, we will see you next week.
I got gorged.
Have an excellent week, everybody, and we'll catch up again very soon.
See you, my dudes.
Very soon.
Bye, everybody.
Cheers,
happy
everyone.
Weekend. Friday it up.
Happy weekend.
Peace out.
Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com